The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Euro 2012, and when two tribes go to Warsaw, it's an absolute belter. Jagoev and Blazikowski blowing the group wide open with the greatest Cuba smash since the Brothers Gibb. Meanwhile in Wroclaw, just 6 minutes for Czechs to win it, despite the best offices of Pedder, their goalkeeper. What'll happen, though, is this extraordinary group reaches its climax later in the week. We'll be talking about that and looking forward to Wednesday's games featuring Denmark-Portugal, Ronaldo against Cronaldo, and another of the game's great rivalries, Holland-Germany. Please let Peter Drury be doing this one too. All of that and more in Football Daily. Woo! Everybody, day five of the Euros. Hello, Rob Smythe.
Hello.
Welcome back, Barry Glendinning.
Thank you.
And hi there, atmospheric sounds of a motorway. What's going on, Barry Glendinning?
I'm not sure, Jimbo. We've been sitting here in the Bescot Stadium for 4 hours. It's freezing cold, the lights aren't on, there's nobody here, and I'm starting to wonder if something hasn't gone terribly wrong.
Yeah, you know what it is? Large industrial town in the West Midlands, town of 100 trades. We're in Walsall.
Oh, bugger.
It had to happen, didn't it? I wonder how many other international broadcasters have made the very same mistake. Tens, I should think. Anyway, what a shocker. Jonathan Wilson's going to be joining us on the line ever so shortly. But before he comes on and lords it over and takes up all the airtime with his tactics and tic-tacs and all that stuff, let's just say, Rob, there are 1-1s, and I don't mean any disrespect to anybody who might have been playing on Monday, there are 1-1s, and there are 1-1s.
And there are 1-1s. It was a fantastic game. It was probably the most enjoyable game of the Championship so far, which admittedly isn't that difficult. But it was just, it was a very kind of old-fashioned game in that both teams were actually trying to win, rather than kind of being intent on not losing. It was only in the last 4 minutes or so they started actually, but I think both teams were exhausted because it was quite an emotional game.
It was emotional. I mean, I don't have any emotional ties to either team, and yet I felt my heart tugged in all sorts of directions in this one.
Yeah, because for various reasons, obviously. Yeah. The history and the violence.
The history, beforehand. That Russia marching Day. Business before. And then the Poles. I'm really enjoying this Polish team, the way they play. And it just seemed, when the Russian goal went in, and they were playing fantastic, I just thought it was so sad for them to go out. You made an interesting point in your Minute by Minutes, Rob, about how the narrative of the host nation is so important to the whole atmosphere, the whole story, the identity of a tournament.
And
it would have been sad if they had already been poised on the brink of an exit.
Really is. You think of teams who've won it, like Argentina. Italy in 1990 was an amazing story. Last two World Cups, South Africa was a great story, but they were gone pretty much after two games. Last Euros, Austria and Switzerland were completely useless. Being in England, you kind of don't always see the greatest manifestations of patriotism. But, you know, like xenophobia, all that stuff. But Poland were brilliant. They played with an enormous pride and just kind of very intrepid and enjoyable, really quick team on the break. And their captain scored an amazing goal, Blazikowski, which is just kind of one of those perfect moments. You talk about captain's goals, which is such a cliche, but the nature of this goal and the timing of it is something that Polish people will remember forever, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Historic night. A night of history.
And the night is still very young. Very it could true. Get a lot more interesting and possibly not in a good way. So a draw is probably the best result.
Oh, you're talking about the whole kind of Russian and Poland.
That's exactly. Well, it's Russia Day today. Yeah. And Russian supporters staged a march through Warsaw. And it was a proper bona fide march as well. Not one of those lambos from the pub to the they were going to be in anyway, etc. and so on.
Right.
But hopefully it won't all kick off later. And for that reason, probably a draw was the best result for just health and safety reasons rather than anything else.
We'll talk more about the Greece, their game with the Czech Republic a little bit later on, because Warsaw, let's hope nothing happens to this wonderful city known as the Phoenix City after it was completely destroyed in World War II, some of those events you were referring to before, one of the greenest cities in the world, 67th most expensive city in the world to live in, unlike
Are you
Warsaw.
Talking about Warsaw or Walsall?
This is Warsaw.
Because Walsall lost, I think, 2,000 of their menfolk during World War II as well. So cities have quite a lot in common.
That's true, isn't it?
So it's probably not the 67th most expensive place to live in Europe.
Right. Does Warsaw have an IKEA? Because Walsall does. Just thought I'd mention that. Let's go to the listeners. Rim Tobberts, I'm guessing that he's done a bit of a spoonerism thing there. says, are Shavin and Zhagoev, Russia sure do have a cracking pair of strikers.
Very good.
Yeah, all right. Well, that was my only comment from the listeners. They've been quiet tonight, actually, too busy watching the game. I did notice, Stats fans, that five of Russia's last seven goals at major tournaments have been scored or assisted by Arshavin. He was again, outstanding tonight, wasn't he, Rob?
Yeah, he was the Arshavin we kind of fell in love with in 08, really, and the Arshavin who Arsenal bought. It just kind of that lovely way pitter-patters, and it's so menacing every touch. You never know where he's going, what he's going to do. He's actually, he was fitful tonight. He was brilliant in patches, but about 20 seconds before the equaliser, he buggered up a 4-on-3 break, and that was costly in the end. But he was still really exciting.
Are there outstanding players for you today?
I thought Abraniak, who played just off the front for Poland, was superb. I haven't seen him play before, actually, which is a disgraceful admission of not doing any research. But he's just glorious left foot. That's what you kind of instinctively call educated. That's the cliche. But made the goal and made their other major chance and just played really well. And also had a comedy strop when he was taken off, which is always endearing.
Malafi, for a reserve goalie, doesn't look too shabby.
Yeah, he made a fantastic reaction save with his feet. He kind of often saves like that are quite fortunate, but you could see he did actually move his feet really quickly. He played well. Poland had a lot of kind of near chances, but not actually that many clear chances, which was the same in the game, actually. Neither keeper did that much. It was just a really enjoyable open game.
Russians look majestic, imperious at times, do they not?
Yeah, they do, in a way that Russian sides do. You have to kind of be careful. It verges towards cliche and a stereotype, but you kind of...
That's where I was trying to get to, actually.
Yeah. You do kind of think that a good team would put them away.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Which is the good team that you're seeing out there in this Euro 20 tour?
Well, that's the point. There aren't any, are there? I'd imagine someone like Germany or Spain would put them away.
Mm.
But you don't know. They're dangerous. And again, if Arshavin plays, and we saw in 08, they slaughtered Holland in the quarterfinals. I don't think anyone want to face them,
right?
But equally, I certainly don't think they can win it.
The Greeks must face them in their next group game, and they must win too to stay in this tournament after their 2-1 defeat this afternoon against the Czech Republic. The Greeks must beat them, Barry, to stay in the tournament. You were very much minute-by-minuting that Czech game. That had some drama, that had some passion, didn't it? Had some comedy keeping.
Yeah, it was weird insofar as Greece pretty much did a carbon copy of their first game against Poland in that they were losing at half-time and then they brought on a substitute who took advantage of a goalkeeping blunder to get them back in the game. But in this case, it wasn't enough and they ended up losing. And the goal they scored in this game was pretty much identical to the goal Salpingidis scored when he came on at half-time in their game against Poland. Petr Cech came out for a ball, didn't get it. I think, and I could be wrong here, but it looked to me like it was possibly an act of cowardice that cost him. Ducked his head out of the way to try and avoid a collision.
The ball passed through his hands, though.
Well, the ball came through. He clearly called for it, so his centre-half, Thomas Sivok, left it to him. And then Cech looked as if he was about to collide with Sivok and ducked his head out of the way and kind of spoon the ball,
but the ball
into
passes
the
between
path.
His hands.
So essentially, Stephen Hunt scored that goal, is what you're saying?
Stephen Hunt could get an assist for that. And it's the only assist he'd get in this tournament, so he should take it with both hands. But so the upshot anyway was that Greece got back into a game they had no business in being in. Really, they are terrible. There isn't a hope in hell to beat Russia.
What about the Czechs? That had dangerous. Can they be, especially on the basis of those blistering opening 6 minutes, how dangerous can they be for Poland's chances?
I would fancy them to give anyone a good game. I mean, in midfield, they're very good. Juracek, Plazil, Rosicki. He had to go off today, though. I think he was injured at halftime. I'm not sure if he was being rested, but I think there was some manner of strain, so it's difficult to know if he'll be fit for the next game or not. They're imperious in midfield, and then they've runners coming from the back, and I was very impressed with them. But again, Greece are hopeless. They really, really are terrible. Now, they've had bad luck. Both their first-choice centre-halves were out. One suspended, one injured. So the one that was suspended will be back. The one that injured won't be because he's out with a long-term injury.
They have names, these people, Barry?
The injured centre-half is called Papadopoulos, and his replacement is Papadopoulos. and the other one is Papas. I just cannot say this name, no matter how hard it is. Papasthodopoulos.
On the left.
Papasthodopoulos on the left hand. I don't know if he plays on the left or the right.
All right.
But he was the guy who was really unfairly sent off in their opening game against Poland.
Sorry, I didn't catch the name of that last one. What was
Papasthodopoulos. On the left hand side. Papasthodopoulos.
All right, well...
How far into that bottle of beer are you tonight, Jimbo? A third of the way? You are the biggest lightweight I've ever seen.
Anyway, follow that. Jonathan Wilson is all I can say. Mobile Brain in Tank is currently situated in heart of Euro football excitement, Warsaw, high on the whole thrill of that extraordinary match.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Yeah, I thought it was another very, very good game. I think, yet again, we've seen that the European Championships produced better football than the World Cup. And that was perhaps not the absolute highest quality, perhaps not quite as good as the Italy-Spain game. But yeah, another very, very good game, very exciting, could have gone either way at the end. And probably a draw, a fair result, and I think probably the best result in terms of trying to calm things down in Warsaw tonight.
Yeah, a point that Barry was making indeed. It's interesting, there's been no nil-nil so far. All the games been pretty open as well.
That's right. I think the last tournament without a goalless draw was the European Championship in 1988. Well, of course, that was only eight teams, so far fewer games. But so far, we're on course to repeat that.
All right. Well, having seen Russia's performance tonight and indeed the Poles, what's your feeling about this group with all four teams still in it?
Well, I think Russia should. I mean, they only need a point against Greece. I'd be amazed if they didn't get that. And then a draw would be good enough for the Czechs against Poland. I think probably they're fairly evenly matched. Whether home support is enough to kind of give Poland that extra thrust, I'm not sure. I think probably I'd just favour Poland, but then the fact the Czechs only need a draw, you know, that they've got a very good chance as well.
We're hearing word, Jonathan, that it's all kicking off in Warsaw tonight.
Yeah, it really, I mean, before the game, certainly it was. I'm not sure what's happening now.
No, apparently
but,
now it's getting pretty grim out there.
Right, it doesn't surprise me. I mean yeah, these are two countries with a pretty poisonous past. They've both invaded the other repeatedly. The Russians, during their anthem, unveiled an enormous banner. I mean, I don't know how they got in the stadium, because it must have folded down to, I don't know, something the size of Baylor Hay or something. But a huge banner showing the prince who liberated them from Polish-Lithuanian rule in the early 17th century, which, of course, I was well-versed in. I didn't have to Google that in any sense. And that had the legend at the bottom, "This is Russia." Now, if that just meant this bloke is sort of the embodiment of all that is best about Russia, I guess that's fair enough. If it meant this land is Russia, then clearly that's a far more inflammatory thing. But basically, the stadium is just to the east of the river, and you have to go over a big bridge to get there. There's a march of around 5,000 Russian fans celebrating Russian National Day, which falls today. And they went from the centre of town across this bridge to the stadium. And not particularly surprisingly, en route they were attacked by Polish hooligans. They fought back. The police intervened. And from what I saw, and I can only say what I saw, worse things may have happened elsewhere, but the police seemed to act fairly swiftly, fairly decisively, and with sort of requisite force, but no more. But the police spokesman said they did use plastic bullets, they did use tear gas, water cannons, and auditory grenades, which are those sort of sound bombs that kind of clear an area by making an enormous noise. So I think I probably didn't see the worst of it. I think there were 56 arrests before kickoff, 7 people hospitalised, and yeah, my suspicion is those numbers are going to rise as the night goes on.
Well, Jonathan, one hopes sincerely that things are going to calm down there, not least for your safety as you leave the stadium. So in football terms, it's all been great, the tournament so far. And anything that's particularly caught your eye, any great novelty? Some people have been astonished by the Italians playing three at the back, the Spanish playing with nominally no strikers. What's been your big discovery, Jonathan?
Well, I mean, I thought that game was fascinating, because I just don't think I've ever seen a false nine play against a back three. But I think more generally in the tournament, what normally happens, particularly at Euros, where there's not a huge difference in quality between the first team, you know, the best team and the 16th team, it's pretty much uniform teams, which I think is why the football tends to be so good.
Right.
But what we've really seen is that rather than sort of being in the middle of spectrum of proactivity and reactivity, very quickly games have settled into a pattern where one team is proactive and one team is reactive. Almost as though teams are far more happy to take on that mindset, to take on that personality. And I suspect this is a reaction to Barcelona, that the fact they've been so proactive and they've played in that way where they dominate possession, it's almost impossible, almost inconceivable to get the ball off them. Well, teams have now worked out, thanks to Mourinho's Inter, thanks to Real Madrid, thanks to Chelsea, that actually the way you combat that is just to sit in the bunker, is just to sit tight. And so I think is almost become a more acceptable way of playing. So, yeah, we saw even Portugal do that against Germany, which is, I think, a very un-Portuguese way of playing. England did it against France. Italy did it to an extent against Spain. Denmark to a lesser extent against the Dutch. But it does seem that mentality of retreating and playing this very reactive football has really taken hold.
Jonathan Wilson, couple of posts. Ooh, this is from producer Ben. Can we have a big shout-out to long-time listener Sol Toon, who became a dad for the first time last night? Apparently you know this chap, Rob.
We bonded via the internet.
There is no greater way to bond. Lovely.
Congratulations.
Well, congratulations to him.
What do you mean, bonded by the internet?
He emails you over.
All right.
I email him back.
All right. Cool.
We're pals.
Okay.
Ben also wishes to mention that in tomorrow's Football Daily, it's Barry and Scott Murray and Leander Scherlakens, who's going to talk to us about the Dutch. The Dutch, who, of course, speaking of great rivalries, historic, etc., precedents and stuff, how about this? Holland-Germany. And it's do or die for the Dutch as well. A lot of the Dutch papers seem to be a little bit doubtful about whether they've got this big recovery, whether they can bounce back against the Germans. But I don't know. I don't think the Germans were all that in their game against Portugal. What do you think, Barry?
I don't doubt the Dutch have the ability to bounce back. Whether or not they will remains to be seen.
Mm.
But the fact that they have to win sort of spices it up considerably. And obviously the rivalry between them is massive. I think they've played 7 times competitively since the war, if not ever. But since the war, they've played 7 times competitively. Germans have won 3, the Dutch have won 2, and there's been 2 draws. And, it's Holland's attacking style versus Germany's counter-attacking style. So some say the Dutch style could sort of play into the Germans' hands. But
really?
I don't know.
I agree with that. I think that Germany found it a bit difficult because Portugal played fairly defensively. Germany are, as Jonathan would say, a reactive team. And I think it will suit. The only thing is Holland don't necessarily have to win. They'll know by the time they kick off.
The only false nines they'll be offering is when you ask them if they think they're going to win the title. Because they'll be saying, yeah, okay.
Holland could get away with a draw, depending on what they'll know, because Portugal will have played Denmark. So it's not necessarily do or die. But equally, by the time they play, if Portugal, I forget which way, but anyway, Germany will know they might have a chance to put Holland out, and there's not much greater motivation for
the
German team.
Now, exciting team news, because, of course, the big question was the whole Van Persie-Huntelaar business. Yeah. Well, apparently, Bert van Marwijk, what he's going to do, apparently, is he's going to have Dirk Kuyt playing at right back. He's going to have only one. Well, he's going to have only one defensive midfielder with a deep lying creative fellow, a la Van der Vaart. And then he's going to have Klaus-Jan Huntelaar in as the number 9, of course, record scorer in the qualifier, well, top scorer anyway.
False 9 or
no, as a real number 9 and a genuine number 9 and Ravi be out wide. Hey, what do you think about that? And Robin, of course, will be on the other side, will he? I presume
they'll be inside out.
So who does he drop?
I think he'll be Robin. I'd put him inside out if I were you. Why?
Because I think it's a complete plank. I don't really understand what the fuss is.
He scores goals. That's what the fuss is, Rob.
Goals are so 20th century, James.
No, they're not.
I think I wouldn't put him near the team personally, but I agree. I think a really important.
He did
challenge
in qualifying, and he kind of worked really well. They scored loads of goals, and
yeah, well,
no,
I don't know. I'm not saying I know more than the Dutch manager, but you know, be the judge. Oh, well, I think that more important is getting rid of one of the defensive midfielders
yes.
and bringing Van der Vaart. I think that's a really good move. Risky, because again, Germany will play on the counter, but I just think Van Bommel and De Jong is kind of too much of a bad thing.
All right, okay. And Germany, were they actually that good? Do you think it was just that the Portuguese made it difficult for them?
Germany were great. They're a nice team to watch. They have a lot of very pleasant footballers. I'm not the thing that worries about Germany is I don't know how many kind of leaders they have in the team. Özil kind of sums that team up. He's so pretty and such a really lovely, lovely footballer, but there's not that much ruthlessness apart from Schweinsteiger. So that would be the worry. I'd still back Germany to not lose the game.
Right. Well, thing for the Dutch is, if Denmark don't get beaten by Portugal earlier in the day, on Wednesday, then the Dutch pretty much have to win to stay in it. What about that Denmark game against the Portuguese? Because the Danes, they were one of the big stories of the first round of matches with that 1-0 win over Holland. Can they do it again? Let's hear now from Lars Eriksson, friend of the podcast, with his thoughts.
Hello, James. How's it going?
Yeah, ever so well. We're having a terrific time here. And yourself?
Oh, excellent. I just got back a couple of hours ago and catching up on this land of hope and glory.
Right. Is the bunting still out on the streets from the extraordinary Danish win over the Dutch?
I haven't been to the central square yet, but they do seem quite chuffed here.
I can imagine they would be. Well, how big a victory was that for Danish football?
I mean, some people are talking here about it probably being the biggest of Olsen's reign. You know, to be honest, I mean, except for Niklas Bentner, Danes really don't do self-confidence all that well. But there's obviously a new sense of restrained optimism after that win. I think at the same time, pundits are also realistic that, you know, if Portugal enjoy in his sort of the same possession as the Dutch did, it can't be as wasteful in front of goal, and we wouldn't be able to survive another onslaught. But the positive thing for Olsen is that a lot of the question marks that were raised before the first game now seem to have been answered positively, and his decisions have been validated. I mean, Stefan Anderson, you know, really cemented his place as the new number one keeper, despite trying to make a real Jesper Olsen with that pass to Robin. Lindegaard might be the more attractive option, but you know, Anderson made some crucial saves, and dear old Simon Kjær probably played as well as he has since he left Palermo. So it's all looking very good.
No, it certainly is. Although, as you mentioned, the pundits rightly pointed out that you were just one misfiring striker away from a potentially big defeat. You're playing Portugal next. They're not known for their high goal-scoring ways, and of course, Denmark do have a terrific record against them.
That is certainly true, and I think before the tournament, this was the game that the Danes were looking towards getting something out of. That's why they are so utterly baffled as to why we're standing here now with 3 points. And if you look at the four qualifiers we played against them over the last 4 years, we got, you know, 2 wins, especially the last one, 2-1 in Copenhagen, was quite emphatic. So I think where some of the question marks probably were regarding the defensive lineup ahead of the Holland game, I think now you have to look towards the attacking lineup where, you know, Christian Eriksen really never turned up for the Holland game. He was outstanding in the qualifier against Portugal, and I think when Denmark enjoyed a lot of possession, he's terrific. But when we get under the cosh, he does seem to disappear a bit. And then obviously there's dear old Niklas Bentner, who, for some reason, seems like he's thrown all of the toys out of the pram for this one and just decided to enjoy himself. You know, he's even been smiling and praising his teammates and talking about the love within the team. So, you know, there was another terrific interview with him before the tournament where he, you know, despite various questions over his goal scoring rate and, you know, various run-ins with the law and late night shenanigans, he still thought the biggest letdown of the last season was the fact that he failed to learn to play the grand piano, which is obviously a real shame.
It is a shame. Barry?
Niklas Bentner, who I've been banging the drum for him, expecting big things of him in this tournament, he's played against Portugal 4 times in his career and scored every single time.
Yeah, it is really an impressive record. I mean, there's been some talk here about how, you know, him squaring up to Pepe, and it could turn out to be quite a tasty battle and, you know, might there might be a bit of friction between the two of them. But as I said before, you know, he does seem a changed player from what we saw. What we saw 2 years ago, he was a bit more moody and kept to himself. And he's really, the team just seemed to gel much better this time. You know, maybe has something to do with Olsen getting rid of some of the old guard, but it's a really positive change. But actually, as you mentioned, Barry, speaking about your Bender prediction, you've been making the news over here in Denmark as well with that.
Yeah.
Even one of the big sports tabloids here had you down as renowned English experts.
Right.
Barry Glendenning. So right. You know, that's obviously.
How many parts of that are so very wrong?
Yeah, you know,
is it all three words?
Them for libel, but right. There you go.
Okay. I thought you were going to say I was in the tabloids because they got wind of that time you brought me and a gang of my Irish chums to a bar where a woman with large breasts did unspeakable acts on a beer pump.
I have to point out that my wife and my 3-month-old son are sitting next to me, so I can't really comment much further on that.
Okay.
Tell us something about Ronaldo.
Oh, Ronaldo, yes. I mean, this is the most unlikely success story before the tournament began. You could argue that his career has somewhat petered out since he was a youngster at Ajax and now plays distinctly average for a distinctly average Brøndby team in the Danish Super League. But he does seem to turn it on for the national team. And I think Olsen's really had faith in him. And he's now, you know, Cornelius has been paying that back in abundance. I thought he looked a threat throughout the whole Holland game. And also, he's got a great game, a great goal against Portugal in the qualifiers. So I expect more great things from him.
All right. What do you think is going to happen then? Do you think the Danes are going to make it 2 out of 2?
Well, I'm hesitant about that. I think it might be a hardly fiercely contested game. More, I suspect, maybe a 1-1. There are some issues still, I think, with, you know, at some stage from now that we'll have to turn up for one of these tournaments. And I think the two, Simon Poulsen, I thought, did terrific against Holland. He really sussed out Robin, you know, learned from Ashley Cole, let him do these cut-ins from the right. But I think him and Lars Jakobsen against Nani and Ronaldo are going to have a real tough time. There's been some talk about reintroducing Michael Silberbauer into the side, who Silberbauer really handled Ronaldo well in these previous qualifiers. But, you know, Poulsen does add a bit more going forward. So I think we'll see an unchanged Danish lineup for this game.
All right. Well, listen, best of luck with that one, Lars. And enjoy. Hope to be speaking to you again soon.
Indeed so. Thank you very much, James.
That's Wednesday's lineup. Then, of course, a lot of excitement about potentially the inclusion of 20-year-old Nelson Oliveira in the Portuguese side. He looked a little bit special when he came on towards the end of that Germany game, maybe giving them that goal-scoring potential up front that the Portuguese lacked. He said,
"They do need something up front.
They do need
desperately."
Mm. Oh well,
Doyler say in a previous pod that I wasn't on, but listened to that. He thought Cristiano Ronaldo should play as a striker. I think that makes sense tomorrow.
You think it does?
Well, he hasn't played well against Denmark in previous games. Like, they faced them in qualifying, and they faced them in qualifying for the World Cup in 2010. He hasn't pulled up any trees playing on the wing in those games. So why not? They need goals, so why not throw them up front?
Why not, happens? Indeed? There you go, Mr. Bento. If you're listening, have that one for free. That is the end of today's Football Daily. We'll be back, of course, tomorrow. Barry will be with us. Rob, thank you ever so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Producer Ben, who's going to take a day or two off to think about what he's done. Producer Ian will be here tomorrow. Hopefully you will too. Listener, bye for now.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.